Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yeah, well, I didn't build the program. Rich Books and Mike Bellotti built the program. I just kind of jumped in after Mike, but it's a special place, and I think it's great for our players. You know, a chance for them to play in one of the special places in college football. And, you know, they came out here a couple years ago and got to play in the Shoe. We get to go play in Autzen Stadium, and it's Autzen Stadium at that time of day. It's truly special, so I think our guys are excited. They're a really good team. You know, and I think that'll get your attention right away when you look at the film. And then I have, you know, family there. I have a brother-in-law and a sister-in-law and three nephews, so I'll get a chance to see them. And then some of the coaches that I've coached with, Nick Eliotti, John Neal, Don Pelham, Steve Greatwood, a couple guys we've text messaged. So besides family and those coaches that I worked with, that I'll get a chance to see very quickly, it's about the game. You know, and I'm fired up for our players because it is a really special place to play.
Chip Kelly, Ohio State offensive coordinator, talking about Oregon and Ohio State. Here to talk more about it and the rest of college football, Chris Vanini, senior writer at The Athletic. He covers college football, does a great job at it. You can find him on Twitter, at Chris Vanini. Chris, Chip, let's start with Chip Kelly. How big of a factor is he in this Ohio State-Oregon game?
Well, I think he's done a really good job so far as the offensive coordinator, just coaching ball, not having to deal with NIL and a lot of those things he didn't seem to like to do at UCLA. But the running game for Ohio State this year is much improved. Part of that is adding Quinshon Judkins, but part of that is just the scheming he does. He did a really good job, you know, putting together a running game at UCLA and a lot of different things that they did there, and you're seeing it at Ohio State so far. And that's where I think their offense starts. For all the attention on Jeremiah Smith and Will Howard, it's really for Ohio State based on that running game that Chip Kelly's so good at.
I have a hard time with Ohio State and a little bit with Oregon because they haven't played anybody, Chris. And so when you try to evaluate a matchup like this, given that you're looking at all of college football, how do you figure out who's good and who's not, especially at this point of the season where we're just starting to see these teams cross over and play in conference?
Well, shoot, even the teams who have played somebody, Alabama beat Georgia and then lost to Vanderbilt. So I think in college football, more than any other sport, you just have so few sample sizes, and you really never know what you're going to get on a given weekend. That's part of why we love the sport so much, because you never know what could happen on a given Saturday. We had a bunch of unranked teams beat ranked teams last year. So you just kind of have to base it on your eye test a bit and hope you get the best team that day. I mean, I think Ohio State, they haven't played anybody great. And the last couple of games, they've gotten off to some slow starts. Michigan State, it was 7-0 with Iowa at halftime, I think, last week. So this is going to be a completely different environment and situation for both of these teams, and it'll be interesting to see who handles it best.
What does this game mean? I've wrestled with this a little bit. Like, you know, I'll just throw a couple of things at you I'm thinking about. You know, for Oregon, they haven't won a game like this, right? They've lost to Washington twice last year. Of course, they won bowl games, but it was Liberty in the bowl game. It was, you know, there's a Holiday Bowl, and so they haven't won a big game like this other than maybe Colorado, if you want to call it that, last year. But that was more of a, you know, let's expose Colorado, you know, Saturday afternoon. Ohio State, we kind of penciled them in the playoff, right? And maybe both these teams are being penciled in. But what's at stake this week, given that we have an expanded playoff and this isn't really an elimination game?
No, it's similar to the conversation we had with Alabama and Georgia. And you have a lot of people who will say, no, the game doesn't matter because both of these teams are probably going to make the playoff. And while that may be true, it doesn't mean there aren't stakes to this game. And I think what a lot of people aren't really thinking about yet, and maybe won't really think about until we get those first rankings, or maybe until we play the first round games. But the difference between winning your conference championship and getting a first round bye versus hosting a first round game versus playing on the road in a first round game, I think it's going to be massive. And you look into Alabama, suddenly they have a loss to Vanderbilt. They've got a tough schedule coming up. Georgia's got Texas next week. Some of these losses can pile up, and if you drop a game, you might be at 2-3 losses before you even realize that. And where you end up in the bracket is going to be not maybe what you expected going in. And I think a lot of fans have to get used to teams having more losses. We're not going to have two undefeated SEC teams play for the conference championship because everybody in the SEC already has a loss except Texas. So I think this is going to be important stakes because both these teams are trying to get to the Big Ten championship because you want to win the Big Ten to get that bye. The loser of this game falls behind the eight ball, and we'll see if a Penn State is good enough to maybe try to get in for that number two spot. The fact that we don't have divisions anymore in any of these conferences, each conference game is going to carry more weight because of that. And so I think this game has dramatic stakes.
We're talking to Chris Vanini of The Athletic. Is it a big game for Dan Lanning's narrative in your mind in you know, sort of his evaluation as a head coach?
I mean, not me personally, but yes. And I brought this up on our Until Saturday podcast this week, which is, does Dan Lanning have a big game problem? You know, he's 0-3 against Washington. You're blown up by Georgia in the opening game. Now, you could point to a lot of things. Look, that Georgia team won the national championship. Oregon is his first game. The Washington game literally comes down to one or two plays every time. If a fourth down goes a different way, he probably wins that game. I think he's a really good coach. I think he raises the ceiling and the floor on this program in a very big way. You just, again, that's all the teams he's lost to, and the one against Oregon State, which, again, came down to a fourth down decision. But if he does lose this game, I think you will start to see that doubt coming in for some people. Hey, can he get us over the hump, or is he just going to have us on the fringe there? I wouldn't take one game to say that, but it is something you do want to see one of these get over the line and get that win and show that, make people believe that he can get Oregon where he thinks it can go.
Chris, the playoff, you already sort of mentioned the idea of how valuable those buys are going to be. I said it at the beginning of the year. I really liked Oregon's depth. I thought Ohio State had depth as well. And, you know, we're looking at the possibility that some team's going to have to play 18 games if they aren't getting a bye and they have to play a conference championship game. Can we sort through this a little bit? Let's start with the conference championship games. You know, there's a real chance here that, you know, you may not want to be in the conference championship game if you know you can't win it. You know, can you sort of explain that to our listeners, what the advantage would be to maybe being that third team that gets in from a major conference?
Well, there's a few parts to it. I do think the fact that we don't have divisions means we're no longer going to get those lopsided championship games where it's an 8-4 team from the Big Ten West, you know, playing Ohio State or something like that. And so I think you're going to have 1-2. You're going to have a bunch of conference championship games that are going to pit pretty evenly matched teams with a bye on the line. What we don't know, and we can really never know year to year, if you lose that conference championship game, how much is that going to hurt you? Because the going theory has been, hey, that number 5 seed probably goes to the SEC or Big Ten championship game loser. And if you're the 5 seed, you're most likely playing the group of 5 team and then winning and playing a Big 12 or ACC team. That seems like a pretty good path. But we don't know that for sure. Could those teams be penalized for losing an extra game? There's no official policy on that. It comes down to how the individual committee members feel. We've had teams that lose their conference championship game make the 4-team playoff. TCU did it. Georgia did it. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. But I think the idea of, hey, maybe we don't want to play that conference championship game if we think we're in because we want a little bit more rest, that could be important. You look at the injuries that are racking up in college football right now. If you have to win 4 games or 5 games, depending on how that conference championship game goes, to get to the championship and win it, that's going to be tough. It's going to be a war of attrition in a way it hasn't been before, because normally you play your conference championship game, you got a month off until the playoff. Now it's only going to be a couple of weeks. And so I think everybody's still trying to figure out how to rest players, how to handle this stuff. But I still really think you're going to want that first round bye and not having to play and getting some more time off.
This feels like a year that's made for sort of there's not a dominant team, right? The 12-team playoff in this year feels like we could have some really fun matchups in the opening round. I'm looking at Boise State, Ashton Gentry having a great season. Boise State to me looks like it's the class of the G5. We shall see. Is there a shot that that Boise State team could be better than a 12 seed in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's very possible. If Boise State wins out and you're 11-1 with a last second loss to Oregon, it's a real shot that that champion could be higher than the Big 12 champion if the Big 12 continues to beat itself up the way it is. If BYU gets a couple of losses, if Kansas State drops another game or two, everybody, it's kind of been shorthand for people to think, oh, the Power Four get the first four seeds and then the Group of Five gets the 12. That's not how it is. If the Group of Five team is champion is ranked higher than the Big 12 champion, or multiple Group of Five champions for all that matters, then they would get the bye. I think it's very, very possible Boise State could end up there. Could they end up higher as an at-large? We'll see. That'll be tough, because to be an at-large, you pretty much got to be a top 10 team. And we'll see how far Boise State can go. That I'm not as sure about. But I think a first-round bye, it's certainly possible.
Yeah, because the way it goes, top four conference champions, top four highest-rated conference champions get those byes. So you could see if they were in front of the Big 12 champion, you could see that Boise State would be sitting there in a great position. Chris Vanini of The Athletic is our guest. Genty is a Heisman candidate. Where is he right now on your radar and your ballot?
I had him second, just behind Travis Hunter. But it's really, really close. And now I think Genty is the betting favorite for the Heisman, which I think is awesome. I love that people are taking notice of what he's doing, even when they're playing late at night, and people are talking about him. In NFL, people are posting clips of him on social media and stuff like that, saying you got to watch this guy. He feels like the first, like, must-see running back we've had in quite a while. I mean, I want to go back to Reggie Bush, maybe, just to let every week he does something you can't believe that he just did. And that's been really cool. And I think it would be such a boon to college football for someone like him to at least get the invitation to New York and remind people that college football is not just about the Big Ten and the SEC. There are a lot of great players elsewhere. And so far he's on track to do that. It's been remarkable to watch him.
Speaking of the Big Ten and the SEC, you've got the commissioners in those two conferences huddling together. What are they up to, Chris?
Well, I think they want to get on the same page on a lot of things. I think they'd love to try to do a non-conference scheduling agreement. Remember the Big Ten and the Pac-12 did one of those way back in the day, but then the Big Ten, it fell apart because the Pac-12, I think the Pac-12 at that point had gone to 9 conference games and the Big Ten hadn't. And that's kind of the holdup here. Is the SEC is at 8 conference games, and so you got Big Ten people saying, hey, if we're going to do this, if we're adding an SEC game to our schedule in the future, SEC's got to add that too, and go to 9 conference games. I think that'll be a discussion. I think how everybody's handling the House settlement, if that gets fully approved, that's a discussion. Hey, how are you going to divvy up your football money versus this? How are you going to split this with men's sports and women's sports? How do you feel about Title IX and that stuff? They're going to kind of get opinions on that. And then there's the college football playoff. We know that back in the spring, there was a proposal to do a 14-team field with 3 automatic berths for the SEC and the Big Ten each, 2 each for the Big 12 ACC, and 1 for the Group of Five. There was a lot of backlash to it, and so everybody said, all right, let's wait till the end of this first playoff and see how that goes. But I think they're going to want to get on the same page here and understand, hey, when we go back into those college football playoff meetings, here's the proposals we're pushing for. Here are the points we agree on, and here's what we want to get. I don't expect any major decisions to probably come out of this yet, of those things, as everything with college sports take time. But it's the first real opportunity for these leagues to try to fully get on the same page on some big issues.
You know, we obviously have a lot of listeners tuned into what the Pac-12 is doing. Thought it was a big get to land Gonzaga. They still need to add at least one all-sports school, maybe 2 for scheduling reasons. Evaluate what you think the Pac-12 is doing and what they have done with Gonzaga now in the fold.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you've reported it, I've reported it. I think at this point, there's nothing big they can do that would dramatically shake up a TV deal. and based on the reactions to those earlier presentations that were based on projections and speculation, they obviously did not go over well and did not get a lot of the teams that they wanted after the initial wave. I think now you got some time, you start talking to TV broadcasters, you get a real sense of what your deal could look like. You've got some real concrete numbers. And at that point, maybe you try a Memphis Tulane again and see if it changes their mind. It may not, but I can understand trying to go back and do it at least. And then at that point, figuring out, hey, is it worth just getting one more football team to just get to 8? They've wanted to keep this league lean, not have to split the pie in so many different directions. But they've got the foundation. It's a pretty good foundation. I'm still skeptical of not merging at this point. I took a lot of heat for a column I wrote a couple of weeks ago, mostly because I thought once the AAC stuff didn't work, and once you're stewing over these poaching fees and trying to get out of this, it feels like a lot of trouble. When you could have just merged, you could have not had to pay it. And so that's what I would have thought at that point. But everybody's got egos and everybody's got hurt feelings. The Mountain West overplayed their hand in those first negotiations. Then the Pac-12 seemed to think it had a better hand than it had when it was making some pitches. And it's just kind of in a weird spot now where we've got two conferences out west in a way that nobody quite expected.
I'm looking at the Big Ten and the move of USC and UCLA the same way. You know, I went back and looked at what the projections would have been for, you know, the original Pac-12 staying together. And Bob Thompson, the former Fox president, said, you know, $500 million for those schools. And so it would have been $41.6 million per school. And then I'm looking at what Oregon, Washington got, Chris, and I'm going, you know, they're taking a partial distribution. Cal and Stanford didn't end up better off. The Big 12 schools didn't really end up better off. They could have just given USC and UCLA 50 or 60 million, and I bet they would have lived to play another day. It feels like a lot of musical chairs have been played in realignment in the last year that, you know, maybe some of it wasn't necessary, or maybe there are other forces out there. Where do you think it ends up? You know, you got this talk about this Rudy Super Conference. You've got fears about the SEC and the Big Ten running away with it. Gun to your head, what does it look like in a decade?
If I had to guess, I think the Big Ten and the SEC do their own thing. But there's a lot of caveats to that. It's for any of this stuff, like the Super League ideas that are out there, like they're great and all. And frankly, I think if you look at some of these Super League ideas, I think we may look back at them in 10 years and think that's a better idea than what we ended up with, because I think it's going to get very fractured. I don't think that's going to be good. But the problem with the Super League ideas, and maybe with the Big Ten, SEC, whatever they do too, is that if you're going to pool your rights together, your TV rights, that's going to require an antitrust exemption from Congress, because that's what the pro sports leagues needed, and you're probably going to have courts shooting that down. And the NFL got its antitrust exemption in 1961 with the Sports Broadcasting Act. That is why Saturdays have been safe for college football, because that was written into the law by Congress. And so you're probably going to need that. Even, you know, private equity wants to jump in and do all these things, and it sounds great. It's just a lot harder than I think they make it sound. But I do think there are people who are trying to do something that keeps the top level of college football as big as it can possibly be. I do think that's a good idea. I do think that's important. I don't think a 30-team college football league like the NFL is going to be successful in the way that certain people think. But you got to convince the Big Ten and the SEC to do it. They have all the leverage, all the money. You have to incentivize them to give up their power in some way, or create a system in which maybe they still have a lot of the power, but everybody's there. That's the really difficult thing to get a handle around.
Where will your attention be Saturday? Will you be out at a game, or are you following multiple games? How are you covering Saturday?
I will be at the State Fair of Texas covering Texas-Oklahoma. I live here in Dallas, so that's an annual game I get out to here. It's a lot of fun. It's going to be different. It's going to be a 2:30 local game. Usually that's a noon game, but it's a very fun environment. I'll have Penn State USC on my computer watching that as well, and I'll be watching Oregon, Ohio State when I'm writing my story afterwards. So the big coming into the season. This was the biggest weekend of the year with the biggest games when we all looked at it. And turned out last week became a big weekend that we didn't expect. So a lot of big games this week. Looking forward to it. And we're going to have a lot of opinions about a lot of teams.
What is that atmosphere like for Texas-Oklahoma? It's got to be nuts. And, you know, it's a lot of fans and a lot of passion there. I'm looking forward to seeing Oregon and Ohio State. But what's that Texas-Oklahoma thing?
It's unlike anything else in sports. And it's one of those bucket list items, I think, because, again, it's in the middle of a state fair going on. And that state fair is packed with thousands and thousands of fans who are coming and not going to the game. They're just doing the whole fair thing. And so you're sometimes packed in there like sardines trying to get in or out of the stadium. And then you've got the stadium itself that is divided down the middle. One end zone is Oklahoma. One end zone is Texas. The history of the game, it's usually a close game. Usually the team that's heavily favored, it's a close game. It always goes the way you don't expect it. So if anybody has thought about what's a game you need to get down to, Army-Navy is one of those games. Texas-Oklahoma is one of those games. And it's one of those where people want it to stay at the Cotton Bowl at the fairgrounds, not go to AT&T Stadium. They've kept it here. They're renovating the Cotton Bowl Stadium to keep the game there. And I think that's really good for college football.
Chris Vanini of The Athletic. Chris, thanks, man. I'll see you down the road.
Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Follow him on Twitter. At Chris Vanini. Good stuff on college football in general. Coming up, Bruce Barnum in the 5 o'clock hour. Portland State football coach will be with us. Tomorrow it'll be Trent Bray in the 5 o'clock hour. And then on Thursday it's Dan Lanning in the 4 o'clock hour. Make an appointment.